Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. And yes, folks, it's fight week. I was just telling Goes, the news just keeps pouring in. Some of it from Miami, most of it from Miami. But hey, Saudi Arabia looks like it's popping over there with Ngannou and Joshua getting ready to mix it up in boxing. Tyson Fury's around. He's stirring the ship. Stirring things a little bit over there. But yeah, what a fun week. MMA Junkie, of course, has you covered with great coverage down in Miami for our UFC 299. That is the fight card headlined by Sean O'Malley and Marlon Chito Vera in the main event. And Goz and I will be doing a watch along on Saturday. It starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. Cruise into the main card, which is the pay-per-view, 7 p.m. Pacific. And also our colleague Fadha Hanoon will be doing a preview show, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. So you'll see a lot of that. Us promoting it on social media this week. Bear with us, please. And then let's start the show. All right, so Goes, what do you think, man? You think finally Ngannou kind of flexed on Fury? Like, I get it, you're a top-notch boxer, boxing's great, but stop it already with getting too lippy over there, because I will go check you. I got that vibe from Ngannou in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I think he finally had enough. You know, he's pretty reasonable, and he just kind of looks mean. And sometimes the way he reacts to questions, you think he's angry or something, but he really isn't. But this time, I think it did kind of get to him a little bit. You don't really see him swear all that much. And Tyson, but you know, let's be honest here, Tyson Fury does that to a lot of people. And so I think it's good news for Francis Ngannou, because I think if Tyson Fury's trying to push your buttons, it's because he sees some kind of value in possibly fighting you a second time, which is good for you, right? Especially if you lose to Anthony Joshua. So if I'm Francis Ngannou, I think I keep going. Let's back and forth as much as we can.
On Spinning Backclick on Monday, I told the audience about Boxing Junkie. And a guy that's been on our show before, Mike Rosenthal, he had an article about Ngannou and things like that, you know, his boxing career. And he was pretty blunt. He said, look, I think a lot of it had to do with Tyson Fury undervaluing Ngannou's skills. And because of that, the fight was closer than it should have been. But at the same time, he said, Ngannou's also not a tomato can, like a lot of the MMA guys that have gone over. They just kind of don't deserve to be there. But Ngannou, he recognized some skill there. And then, of course, heavyweights have the one-punch power that one always looks out for. But I'm telling you, man, if he beats Joshua, like, we're going to see Ngannou Fury and not MMA out of Ngannou. And I think because it'll be later this year, probably won't see Ngannou till about 3 years since his last fight. At that point, I'm just even wondering if he'd even come back, to tell you the truth. You heard Eric Nixick. Money's big over there, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, but the one thing that we continuously hear from Francis Ngannou is like, part of this whole crusade was to make MMA better, right? Make it better for everyone in mixed martial arts. So I feel like on top of what he's being paid on in boxing, I think he still will come back to MMA. When he comes back to MMA, maybe it is just for one fight or something like that. But I feel like he would look a little ridiculous if he didn't. And I think he's done everything by the book, man. I just feel like despite the giant paychecks, I think he'll come back to MMA for one fight, and then maybe that might be it for him.
We still got Fury and Usyk as well to contend with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there's still a lot going on. I don't know. I feel like the mission for this weekend for Francis Ngannou is just don't get knocked out. If you make it to a decision and you win, great. If you make it to a decision and you lose, that still might work in your favor. You might still be able to get a third fight somewhere and still be considered a top boxer despite being 0-2. I think that's his goal. Just make it to the end. Don't get KO'd.
If Ngannou fires his manager and then says, Goes, you're hired, give me my next three fights, both MMA and boxing. Pick any three. How do you want those to look?
Depending on how this fight ends for him, as long as he doesn't get KO'd and the Fury fight is there, I would say let's take that right now and make that the next fight. But kind of go into it saying, this is it. I just have unfinished business with this guy. But from then on, if you boxers want a piece of me, you're going to have to come into my world. Come back to MMA and just kind of finish that out a little bit. Maybe work with the PFL and just pitch something like, look, why don't we do some sort of mini four-man tournament or something before, just to kind of set things up. But he will definitely come back, and maybe just comes back to face that winner or something. I don't know. But these paychecks in boxing are pretty big, and you can't miss them either. But at the same time, you did kind of make a commitment to mixed martial arts. You made a commitment to an organization. You, in a way, made a commitment to your opponents, right? They make $2 million if they face you. Who knows who could be making decisions to stay with PFL or go to PFL because of that. So I would say you do kind of owe it to them to at least give them that one fight.
Well, look, I'll tell you what. Let's just sum it up here, because we got to get to UFC 299 talk. I am excited to see him fight Anthony Joshua. I'm going to bet on him. I'm going to enjoy the fight. If anyone's wondering, it's Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's what time the fighters will walk to the ring. All right? I don't know about no prelims or nothing like that. That's the time these two guys are going to walk to the ring. Should start 15 to 30 minutes later. It all depends on how extravagant things are out there. But Pacific time, you know, some of you might still be at work. And if you really want to see it, you might want to skip lunch and cut out early. Go Fran. Go Big Fran. But check this out. I do want to see him come back to MMA. But, like, I'm thinking, what are you coming back for? Like, I guess you can say, hey, look, I was once the UFC champ. And if he beats Henan Fajeda, he'll have a PFL strap. I guess that'll be cool, and that adds to the legacy. Does it make him the greatest heavyweight of all time? Probably not. I mean, there's still the Fedor nuthuggers that love him, you know, and of course, I might even be one of them. Miocic. Like, he never really got going, you know, in that regard. Now, if he were to come back to UFC, that's a whole different other animal. No disrespect to Fajeda. I'd still like to see him fight Fajeda, but let's just say he came back and took on John Jones and Tom Aspinall, and I don't think there'd be a Miocic left over, honestly, because that guy's like really like foot out the door. Would that get me excited? Yeah, kind of, but I really just feel like the ship sailed. And now, look, I'm rooting for him in boxing, and if he wins, how's he not fighting Tyson Fury? Unless Fury loses to Usyk, but who knows if Ngannou wants some of that. I don't know. The whole thing's still mixed up and confusing. We'll just take it show by show. Let's see what happens on Friday, and we'll figure it out on Spinning Back Click and next week. Moving on, though, to UFC 299, O'Malley and Vera. What do you want, Goes? If O'Malley wins, they could have a trilogy, especially if it's a good one. I think it's going to be a good fight, honestly. I think both guys are not going to really worry too much about takedowns. Although of the two, I could see O'Malley possibly implementing that. But I think they're going to kickbox for 25 minutes, and I think it's going to be exciting. But what is it that you want? Do you want O'Malley to win instead of a possible trilogy? Or do you want Vera to win, be up 2-0 on O'Malley, and then look at Dvalishvili or whatever else is out there? By the way, Dvalishvili is the backup for this event.
I think I prefer O'Malley winning. I don't really love or hate either guy. So I'm only saying this because of scenarios. I think even if he wins and they're 1-1, I don't think the UFC has any interest in that trilogy. If it comes further down the road, I think they're okay with it, but I don't think they're particularly fired up about this particular matchup. What I do want to see is Dvalishvili get in there and him get a piece of Sugar Sean. I think the lead up to all that would be phenomenal. I think it'd be so much fun. And the fight itself would be tough, man. I mean, I don't know. I have Dvalishvili kind of winning that one. I don't want to say easily, but I think he'll probably be a pretty decent favorite going into that fight. I think I prefer seeing it that way than if it were the other way flipped around with Marlon Vera being the winner.
I think you're right. I kind of like Vera. He's an OC guy, you know, originally from Ecuador. But I guess I never really connected with him. We had a couple fun interviews. He came to the studio once, but then the last few years just really haven't talked to him much to see what he's all about. He's got a great story, you know, with his daughter who's special needs and you know, it sounds like he really puts in the work, like he doesn't dog it, although Aljo supposedly is putting stuff out there. Did you see that, something about maybe he didn't have the best camp or whatever?
Yeah, that he heard that from some people in his camp that he didn't have the greatest camp, and that kind of set Cheeto off. But then again, like, that's kind of the weird thing about Marlon Vera, is anything sets him off, you know. He goes from 0 to 100 like that. All you gotta go is, hey dummy, and boom, like I just flipped out. But this particular, he kind of went at Aljo. He got maybe a little personal with him, but if you put yourself in this dude's frame of mind, and Marlon Vera's, like, it's almost like anything you say to him, he takes it personal. So that's how he responds. But he took some shots at the former champ.
He sure did. And right now, O'Malley's minus 275 at BetMGM. As high as 300 over at Caesars. And Marlon Vera comes back about plus 220, plus 240, depending what house you're betting at. So he's a pretty considerable underdog for a guy that beat Sean O'Malley once before and actually shot him down. So I don't know, man. That's kind of confusing to me, to tell you the truth. The only thing I can think of is O'Malley, if he were to wrestle, his jiu-jitsu is really pretty good. And not to say Vera's isn't or anything like that, but Vera just on his back doesn't offer much. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't know.
I kind of like Vera at an underdog. Don't you like Vera at an underdog if it's that high like that? Look, dude, Sean O'Malley, I don't know how to describe him, because he's always an underdog in everybody's eyes, right? And he's done so much to kind of prove that he is a good fighter, but I don't know that a lot of people think he's a great fighter, and there's definitely a difference there. And you're talking about a guy who did beat him where the fight begins, right, on the feet. And I don't know, Marlon Vera, Sean O'Malley's had his taste of the gold, he's had his taste of that big life. I think Marlon Vera's still a hungry guy. I think he still wants all that stuff, and I honestly think he's going to give him hell as much as he can. Now, Sean O'Malley improves from fight to fight, so you just never know if he's taking that next step again. But Marlon Vera, to me, is just a hungry kid, a hungry dog. And I ended up picking him in my staff picks, man.
It's kind of a trip how Marlon Vera was able to stop some of Dominic Cruz's takedowns. Cruz is a wrestler, not a big-time wrestler, but, you know, he wrestled in high school. He has it as a base. And there was times where he had nice sprawls and just managed to kind of sprawl and brawl until he eventually landed that kick as Dominic Cruz was leaning, you know, to one side. But then when he fought Corey Sandhagen, I mean, he was a fish out of water on his back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Sure. And so I'm just not sure
Corey's so big, though, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was just a Corey Sandhagen thing or a Marlon Vera thing.
He's not even the greatest wrestler, but he's getting better and better at it. I'm talking about Sandhagen. And I'm just wondering if O'Malley might be smart, because O'Malley, man, he ain't no punk. I'll tell you that. He's bizarre. He's a bizarre individual. But it seems like he's got a beat on fighter IQ. That doesn't mean dumb things don't come out of his mouth. But when it comes to fighting, like the way he navigates his career and he talks about what's out there, he's pretty smart in that regard. I think I got to give him credit there. So I could see him easily being the type of guy that can put his ego aside and, you know, go to his strengths and expose Vera's weaknesses. Whereas Vera's very emotional, and I think he could get caught up in the machismo of it all and want to, want to excite the crowd and maybe be stubborn and keep throwing down even if he's not getting the better of the stand-up, which, like I said, in fight number one, he did. Not always, but he did, and that's how he won the fight. But still, that's the part that I wonder about. Some of these fighters with dumb IQs, man. And I'm not saying Vera has that. I'm just saying of the two, I think O'Malley does have a brilliant IQ, you know? But there's some fighters every week where I'm like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think I hope a guy that I'm not sure X's and O's how much he can offer, his manager, Jason House. But the one thing that you can say is when you think about it, you know, Brandon Moreno, Sean, oh my God, what was I going to call him? Sean O'Malley, Sean Strickland, two champs recently from that stable. You know, maybe he can just calm him down and sit him down and just say, look, this is what's at stake. This is what's on the line. I don't know. I know that they do a lot of like seminars within that agency with all the fighters. So I don't know how close each one of them are to each other, but I'm sure you could pick up on some pretty nice tidbits from both guys. And I think it's a mental thing for Vera, because skill wise, I think he's there and he's already proven that he can beat him. So I just think if he, like you said, like if he just keeps it together upstairs, I think he can win that fight.
That fight was, let's see here, 3.5 years ago. Both guys have definitely changed since then. O'Malley, like, it's hard to give him credit because I thought he actually lost to Peter Yan, but I didn't think it was a robbery. And then with Aljo, I felt like Aljo never really got going on what makes him so strong, and that's that suffocating wrestling, right? But he took him out so quick, you know, I tip my hat for doing that, but I just don't know how good he is. Like, you know, he talks about comparing himself to Conor McGregor. McGregor, if you think about that Mendez fight, he was getting his ass kicked. I mean, he got lucky that Mendez gassed, because he really didn't have an answer for what Mendez was doing. Yeah. Then he gets past that, and we don't know what an Aldo fight looks like if they go 25 minutes or anything like that, because he knocked them out so quick that it was over, and that was it. You know, and that was two damn good featherweights that he went through at the very end. And remember, early on, it seemed like he was getting spoon-fed certain matchups. Although, if you look at the record, Max Holloway was part of that. No one would ever say he got, you know, that's the type of guy that that you spoon-feed someone. Holloway just hadn't become Max Holloway yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure.
Co-main event, Benoit Saint-Denis. And look at me leading off with Benoit Saint-Denis and Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier versus Benoit Saint-Denis. But let me tell you something, goes. Oh, man. Like, anytime you tell me the fight's going to remain standing, it's hard to go against Poirier. He's clean, man. He's a clean boxer. But Benoit Saint-Denis he's pretty fun to watch. He's pretty explosive, and he can take the fight to the ground. And Poirier, I'll always remember, he has these weird hips. He just isn't spry, and so it's not hard to take him down. And if you do, then you got a whole different animal that you're dealing with versus having a stand with Poirier.
I'm going to tell you something. This is the fight that I've been looking forward to almost the most this year. I'm a guy that's been high on Benoit Saint-Denis. And I felt like this is his fight. He's gonna win this fight. But the more and more I've dove into this fight, I start to think, man, like, do you think this is make or break for Dustin Poirier? Because I think this is such an important fight for him that I can't expect nothing more than 100% Dustin Poirier for this fight. And if you just look at their records, like, what Benoit Saint-Denis has done has been incredible, right? He's been going through people like butter. But the level of talent compared to what you see on Dustin Poirier's side is not very close. Dustin Poirier has just had monster after monster after monster. He's got the experience. He's a little older. He's got wear and tear. I get that. But this is either going to be that fight that checks Benoit Saint-Denis, or it's going to be the one that makes us go, holy shit. You know, kind of almost like Ilia Topuria, where all of a sudden he's just here. Boom, he's here. He's a menace, and he's going to take over. That could be the fight for Benoit Saint-Denis, or it could just be Dustin Poirier reminding us all, I never went anywhere, man. I'm still at the top. I should still be considered. I went back and forth, and I ended up turning in the name Dustin Poirier, George, which is so weird because from the get-go, I just felt like this was Benoit Saint-Denis's fight.
Dustin Poirier doesn't have much time left in the sport, is what I've heard behind the scenes. So this is the final run. If he beats Benoit Saint-Denis, it doesn't mean he gets a title shot, although you never know with the UFC. But you got to believe the Oliveira Sarukian winner has some status. Justin Gaethje has some status. He'll have to still get past Max Holloway. Forget about Mateus Gamrot, who was a substitute for the, let me get this right, Makhachev and Volk fight. Seems like that's not really worth anything right now. And then you have the unicorn, McGregor, who recently this week put out Chandler in, what was it, Chandler in June, and then he wants to be part of Noche with the dude. We, McGregor, we want you for that, all right? But I feel like a fucking dumb shit every time I bring up your name anymore, so we'll leave him to the side. He does seem like the type of guy that can just ruin a party, though, and, you know, title talk, right?
Yeah.
I think Saint-Denis is pretty legit because it's just his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu's, like, I don't know, it's good, and the striking complements it. I think he's smart if he utilizes the wrestling and bags rounds, and then once Poirier tires a little bit, then maybe, you know, him being like 7 years younger, I think maybe he might be in pretty decent shape and might want to strike then, but at least he'll put it in Poirier's head. I'll take you right back down and hold you there, try and submit you. I mean, he's really, really tough on the ground. Saint-Denis, somebody that, because his striking's so fancy and so nice, like, he's looked at as a kickboxer, but I just think the ground game is potent, man.
He's tough, and I think he's only getting better. But this is just that fight that's going to tell us all so much. And I don't know, man. I'm just going to go with experience. My head is kind of telling me it's going to be Benoit Saint-Denis. It's going to be the night where we all say, you know, almost a star is born. But my heart, I think, is saying Dustin Poirier will just find a way.
If it's 2-2 going in around 5, Poirier will win.
But yeah, probably.
Either that or Poirier will just win every round, and we'll all just admit being wrong about Saint-Denis. But I don't think Poirier can stop Saint-Denis from taking him down. That's the problem. If I thought that, then he just, Poirier's stance, it reminds me of, remember Pearl Gonzalez? They just kind of stand tall, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know Poirier's brought up the hip before. I know he's had surgery, but he just doesn't have these light hips, so he's not really able to sprawl. It causes him to backpedal in a way where sometimes he's just off balance. But again, if you don't take him down, then Poirier's hands are really, really nice, and he's not intimidated by anyone. I can't wait for this co-main event. Remember, Goz and I will be doing the watch along on Saturday on MMA Junkie, so check it out with us. It starts at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Look at this main event. Sorry, main card. O'Malley Vera Poirier, Saint-Denis, Holland versus Michael Page. So that's Kevin Holland versus Michael Page. Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Maddalena. Song Yadong versus Piotr Jan. Just the featured prelims are really nice. Jailton Almeida versus Curtis Blades. Macy Barber versus Catlin. Caitlin Sermonara, which is Caitlin Chikagian. Mm-hmm. And Rafael Dos Anjos versus Mateus Gamrot. Pedro Munoz versus Kyler Phillips. I mean, that's a nice fight night, man, if you just give me those four. And those four didn't even make it to the main card. And then I really am a fan of Michelle Pajeda. I'm not convinced he'll ever be a world champ, but I just find him exciting. He's on the undercard. Joanne Wood versus Marina Moros. Jan Kutalava, the guy that always kind of hulks out on the weigh-ins. He's got Felipe Lins. CJ Vergara is on the prelims as well. So it is a really, really stacked card out in Miami. Not as good as 300, but I give this a 9.5 and 300 a 10. But people are going crazy saying it's better than 300. Shut up.
It was at one point, right? But I think once 300 ended filling out a little bit, mm-hmm. I think, it's just, they just hit you with way too much, you know? But this card does mean a lot. It's more your standard card where fights mean something. But it's, you get 300 is the better card.
Yeah, no doubt. Here's some odds, by the way. I don't know if you've peeked at them yet. Tell me if any of these stand out. We already went over Vera and O'Malley. Saint-Denis minus 225. Poirier plus 175. Holland minus 125. Page plus 105. Page is shitty on his back too, man. I couldn't believe he put Paul Daly on his back because of the two. I thought he was shittier on his back, but Holland's tough on the ground. You know what I'm saying? And if Holland can take him down, he won't even have to worry about dealing with Page's fancy striking. But if he doesn't, then it'll be interesting. I don't think Holland wants any of Page's stand-up.
It's weird because, like, it's just an odd situation for me. I love MVP. MVP's actually getting up there a little bit in age and just how much combat his body's been through. But the one thing that MVP did quite often in Bellator that you just cannot do in the UFC is he's a very slow starter at times.
Big time stallor too.
Yeah, and like barely winning rounds isn't good enough. You really have to cement rounds. And if the moment gets to him, if he wants to have his little feeling out process, this is just not the place to do that. Not especially against a veteran like Kevin Holland. He's going to come at him. So I would pick Kevin Holland in that one. And what was the other one you gave odds on?
Can you believe Jack Maddalena, Della Maddalena is minus 165 and Gilbert Burns is plus 140? Burns is solid. Are they just saying he's getting too old or what?
I think so. You know, that was kind of when I filled out my staff picks, I was like, man, I was sometimes when you look at it, you go, I'm either going to hit this massive home run or I'm going to be an absolute jackass. And I felt like, wait a minute, am I on the verge of being an absolute jackass? Because when I started looking at the odds and the guys I was picking, it's like something's off here. And I took Gilbert Burns because Gilbert's just in your face. Like he's always prepared for a fight. He always gives you his all. And I just think he's going to be way too active. I always mess up his name, but I don't know. I feel like he's going to be all over him from the start and he's going to win rounds and put him behind. So I took that one. And then what was the other fight? You said MVP and Holland. I took Kevin Holland and I couldn't believe that he was I couldn't believe the odds on that one. But what was the other fight that you said?
Well, Vera and O'Malley, Saint-Denis and Poirier. Piotr Jan is minus 115. If you don't get him down, he's tough to deal with. His hands are really, really nice.
That was another one, too.
I just wonder if he's a little worn from some of these big battles he's been in the last few years.
But they've been somewhat close, too, right? And a lot of people thought he beat Sean O'Malley. So yeah, I don't know. There were just so many of these like question mark fights. It was a nightmare putting together staff picks on this one.
Yeah. Folks, we have a little treat for you guys. Mike Perry's going to join us. Platinum Mike Perry, former UFC and MMA veteran, I should say. Been about 3 years, though, since we've seen him in the cage. He's been getting down over at Bare Knuckle, 4-0 over there. He's headlining Knuckle Mania 4 coming up on April 27th. We'll come back with Platinum Mike Perry. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes, always delivering the big names in combat sports. Today we get to talk to Mike Perry, who's now doing his thing. We've met him through MMA, but now he's doing his thing over at Bare Knuckle. Probably the biggest name over at Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship right now. He is blowing up, and guess what? He is headlining Knuckle Mania 4, which is coming up in April in Los Angeles, against Thiago Alves, also another former MMA fighter, title contender. This is going to be a great one. What's up, Mike? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. Good to be one of the best fighters out there right now. And I'm happy to be here and talk to the people. Times are crazy. You know, I say when people ask, you know, how you doing, whatever, it's definitely always I'm doing good, because I don't like to dive too deep into the BS, and I like to stay positive no matter how things are going. You know, stuff happened like just yesterday and today. I've been thinking a lot about the Ryan Garcia stuff, like, because it keeps popping up. Mm-hmm. It's very popular topic, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, you know, I don't see a way for that kid to win in that fight against Devin Haney, especially with all of this stuff that's happening outside of fighting for him. That he seems to be an issue before he ever even steps into the ring. So I'm out here, when I say I'm good, you know, I'm trying to keep my head together no matter what's sinking. And, you know, you just have to stay positive and keep growing, keep going, keep learning, and try to be better. Stay positive, man.
What do you think happens with a lot of combat sports athletes? Even his promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, has had his times as well, where you have the world at your feet, you know, success, belts, money. I know you can't speak for them, but it seems like you really embrace the culture of fighting. And I think, therefore, maybe perhaps you can answer why maybe it just becomes too much for a lot of fighters, and they have this, you know, sort of a, I don't know if you want to call it like a digression or meltdown or what it is.
Yeah. I feel like meltdowns happen a lot. It happens, you know, and over, you know, course of my life, I feel like I've had a few, and some have been worse than others. And after you have them, sometimes it's a little easier to put things back together, but you know, you try to maybe see them coming and try to defend yourself from them, and that bottle just fills up until the top pops off, and you know, things happen. You try to control and keep with that positive attitude. You know, guys like us, we probably need more therapy, bro. We probably need someone to talk to, someone to talk to us, maybe. And there can be a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm sure with Ryan, he's feeling the pressure. He might not see a way that he could beat Devin Haney. And maybe that can add up on you. And sometimes it's not even the fight. Sometimes it's just life, things that are happening in life that can build up on you. And what is great about fighting is that the physical challenges you face can be a type of therapy. You know, after you go and you work out, you can really clear your mind when you really gas yourself out and you get tired and you don't think about it for a little while, and you clear your head because you're just so busy in the moment, working on your physicalities. And, you know, we're all out here trying to figure out life, and fighting is actually, it's a release. It's a freedom that we get as men who compete in a physical sport. So, you know, it's nice to be a fighter, man. I got a love hate relationship with it for sure.
You know, you mentioned that you may have kind of gone through something like that. Would you say it's a daily struggle, or is that behind you? And do you think you got a good grasp on how life and being a fighter works together?
No, it comes and goes. You know, I think that, you know, I don't know sometimes. And, I mean, right when you think that you do know what's going on, or what you think you got a grasp of, usually that's when it hits you. And like, you're like, damn, I don't have a grasp on anything. So, you know, I've been saying for a couple of years now, like, to be the line, and you don't want to be too far on either side of the line. And that's kind of helped me be grounded. And, you know, because you don't want to be too crazy and you don't want to be too casual. Sometimes you got to watch your back when you're out there, and other times you can relax, and you need to know how to do both. You need to know how to relax and find comfort. And, you know, training definitely helps, you know. But like, so tonight is sparring night. I'm probably going to go and get hit a couple times, and I don't know, it'll either make me feel better. I'm going to try not to get hit. Maybe I'll feel even better if I don't, but I'm sure my training partners are going to land some shots on me tonight. And I might have a moment of despair in my night as my brain is healing. And, you know, sometimes, so like my friend, he recently had a fight. It was a world-class fight, and, you know, it didn't go his way, and he was looking good, and there was things to be proud of. And then there was, you know, he just get caught, and it's like, today he finally realized, you know, it was a couple days ago, and he's like, damn, you know, I finally stopped, haven't, you know, and took a look back and took a look in the mirror and was like, damn, you know, it sucks, but what do? You just move forward. And I was actually proud of him, how he carried himself when it was over. And he's been carrying himself this way for a couple of days. And, you know, you hold your head high and you try to give it your best shot. And it's definitely a warm up for me. You know, I'm going into this fight April 27th. I'm training for it now. I am very confident in my capabilities, especially in this matchup. And, you know, winning fights is not, you know, you want it to be the most important thing sometimes, but I definitely have things way more valuable to me than just winning a fight. Even though it's a big fight and it's a big opportunity and it can change me and my family's lives. And it's weird because in the position I'm in and I've been doing so well, when I say, you know, change my family's lives, it's like, well, then I got to figure out what to do with all of this that I'm receiving and getting, all of the opportunities. And you just kind of go with the flow and you let things pick up around you, and you hire people for sure to help you put things in the right place, to help you keep growing and make it sustainable for your family and your future and your growth. And, you know, definitely the right team around you is a big part of that, which in the fight game, some fighters, you know, I was definitely a fighter who thought this is an individual thing. But for a while now, I've noticed all that I receive from a team of people around me, even those who can't actually even physically train with me. Like, there's little kids at the gym and they inspire me sometimes just because they're so young and they push so hard and they want to be better and they want to make a future for themselves and for their parents who support their journey and travel to all the fights with them. And, you know, it makes me think about what I'm going to do with my kids, whatever they're going to want to do. I'm going to support them fully. And that's a lot of work. It can feel overwhelming. It feels like you have a million things on your plate. And like this morning, like last night it rained. And this morning I was looking at my driveway and there's like been a lot of pollen and stuff here in Florida. And it's like, man, my driveway is covered in leaves and like grass and stuff from the rain and the storm last night. And it's like, dang, did my neighbors already wake up and they like brush their stuff off? Did they leaf blow their side into my side? My driveway is looking terrible right now. And I'm like, I got to clean this up. And I'm like, gosh, my life is kind of feeling like my driveway right now, man. All I got to do is get out there, put a little elbow grease in and put some work in. So, you know, I'm excited to have this journey and to be on this path. And I ain't gonna lie, man, it seems like it's gonna be a little easy win paycheck for me here April 27th if Thiago Alvarez shows up.
Yeah, he hasn't fought like in 3 years, if I'm not mistaken. He's a big name, that's for sure. But I think this card is built around you. Tell me if I'm wrong. You know, full respect here. Luis Palomino, I think, was 9-0, two titles. I think we were calling him the best bare knuckle fighter ever. He just took a loss to Austin Trout. And so, of course, maybe there's someone there to take his place. You're very popular. You've skinned some big time cats, man, some big names. Everyone's all over Mike Perry. But do you feel like what we chatted about before the interview started, you are the top guy now at bare knuckle? Or did you even feel that before Palomino's loss?
Yeah, for sure. I've been the top guy. I mean, I've been fighting big names, and these other guys that are in there, other than Lorenzo, everyone who's fought their opportunity to fight a big name, they didn't do well. And I fought big names, you know, MVP, Luke Rockhold, Eddie Alvarez, and I stunned them every time. So, I mean, Lorenzo, he fought one of the biggest names he fought was Hector Lombard, and he was successful. So, I mean, that was a big moment for him, but I've done it time and time again. And, you know, the thing about Thiago is he was a champion in bare knuckle, and it doesn't matter that he's had, I don't know if it was 3 years. I don't know. Maybe it was like two, maybe it was a little more than two. I don't know. But, you know, time out of the ring doesn't always mean, you know, like look at Brian Ortega. He had time out of the ring. First round against Yair was not good for him, but he chose to stand and fight. And now I'm not going to sit here and toot Thiago's horn. You know, I think I can easily win this fight if I continue to be me and do what I do in that ring. And we're fighting at 185. The one time I fought at 185, I got hit one time, and I had a very clean performance, probably my cleanest performance ever. And so I'm looking forward to being back at that weight, building my strength through training camp, and using my boxing abilities against a former bare knuckle boxing world champion who did not lose his title. He only, you know, he took a leave from the sport because maybe there was no one for him to fight and he wanted a bigger fight. So, you know, the fight is here now. This is the biggest fight and that we could make right now because, you know, Eddie Alvarez had one bare knuckle fight. And he had, obviously, he's a world champion in all those other organizations. Luke didn't have one bare knuckle fight. And that's not to say that my experience mattered all that much because it's just my boxing. Like, Julian had 9 bare knuckle fights when I fought him. So, you know, Thiago being 2-0 in bare knuckle and I'm 4-0, but he's, got many more MMA fights than me against the best competition ever in mixed martial arts, like George St. Pierre and others. We watched him, you know, do well in UFC and MMA for years. And, you know, it's boxing. It's more fitting for me. It's how I like to fight. Now he, you know, he did it and he did okay. And, but then he got out of there. So, you know, if he's coming for a check, I'm going to break his neck.
Now, so Mike, you know, Knucklemania is a huge card now, and the sport has grown so much. When I heard Thiago Alves, it kind of caught me by off guard a little bit too, because I thought he was just kind of done with fighting. Was he the first name that was brought up to you? Were there other names in the sweepstake? How did this all end up here with Thiago Alves?
Yeah, no, he wasn't really on my radar. He wasn't something that we were talking about. And then I got the call that it was him, and I figured it was going to be a name that we hadn't thought of really. And I figured it'd be fitting, and it's what the company wants, and you know, I'll take it. Like, let's go to work. I mean, they were trying to make the Darren Till one happen. He still sends me messages talking shit to me, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure they tried to make it happen. Why didn't you take it? And I mean, that's fine. There was also Dylan Danis they were talking about. And I don't know how big that would have been to the crowd, to the bare knuckle fans, or maybe it would have brought in many new bare knuckle fans. But, you know, considering he lost a boxing match, I don't know how much sense that would have made. And then I thought Thiago made sense because his experience, and he had a belt and bare knuckles. So, you know, it's all good.
Do you feel like maybe down the road there is the possibility of one day you and Austin Trout? That seems like a fight that a lot of people would like to see.
It's possible. He won the, 165 title?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they keep fluctuating my weight, playing with my weight. 185. I fought 175 a couple times. I fought 185 a couple times. You know, because there's building that needs to be done. And I get it done. I mean, God makes it happen in his time, and it works out for me, and I'm super grateful that I can step in and perform the way I have, and I always look very physical. The training gets done for me. So Trout's a good boxer. He's a slick guy. You know, Eddie had some success with his being a little, I mean, he looked big, but he still fought like a little bit smaller guy and had some speed. Trout's a good boxer. I think I could box with him. I think I could implement my size on him. But, you know, I've said before, I wanted to fight for like the 185 title. They got guys up there at that size that actually are intimidating. And, you know, I think it would be tougher fights, tougher battles. But you know, stylistically, whatever the style needs to be for me, I got plans I can put together on how to box any of these guys. So, you know, I'll get through Thiago, and if that's something that, you know, the other side wants to earn, or if that's something that the company wants to make, I'm here to keep punching these people in the face, bare knuckle, and keep winning, and keep that right there.
Nice. And early on in the interview, we brought up Ryan Garcia's name. And the one thing that I had thought about was, you know, he has the benefit of leaning on a generation before him, say like an Oscar De La Hoya, right? Felix Trinidad, these types of guys. And they had the Manny Pacquiao's and Floyd Mayweather's, and even way back, Julio Cesar Chavez, all these guys. There's a history. But in BKFC, there's not much of that. If anything, they're probably leaning on you So I guess my question is, how have you gotten to this point in your career with BKFC and sort of, in our eyes, found the right recipe? Who have you been able to lean on, and how did you figure all this out?
I've always been a big fan of boxing. I always liked the boxing, brawling. I always like Mike Tyson. I mean, it's boxing at the end of the day. I don't care about the couple of different rules that bare knuckle has. I'm trying to be the best boxer that I can be. And I've always had the toughness and the tenacity. And, you know, I did look at, yes, bare knuckle was the first like sanctioned real big organization in the States and around the world. There's always been bare knuckle fights. Game Bread, Jorge Masvidal, Kimbo Slice, those guys, you know, growing up, those are stuff that was stuff I watched on YouTube and saw. And I remember hearing stories about some bare knuckle boxer back in the day. And, you know, I just watched fighters, you know, and I implemented what they did, you know, old school Anderson Silva. I like to think of myself as an old school fighter, even with the guys with the gloves on, you know, back in the day coming up, Rampage Jackson, Vandalay the Axe Murderer. You know, I just always been a fan of the best fighters and tried to implement some things and make it my own and create my own style and swagger. And, you know, I'm from Flint, Michigan. I was born in Flint, Michigan, and I was raised in a little bit of Flint, a little bit of Florida. And there, you put those two things together and you got Platinum Mike Perry. And you know, who's from Michigan, you know, it's Floyd Mayweather and
Thomas Hearns.
My name is Mike, so try to be like Mike Tyson, you know, and just fight it out, bro.
Thomas Hearns is from Michigan as well. Emmanuel, Emmanuel Stewart in the Kronk Gym in Detroit.
And Jamal Hill.
Jamal Hill. Yeah, some tough cats come out of Michigan for sure. That belt, before you pointed to it, I couldn't take my eyes off it. It's actually really nice. It's a big MF-er as well. Can you grab it for us and show it to us? I guess I've never seen it up close, and if you don't mind.
I was going cross-eyed between the Mandalorian helmet and the belt. They both look sharp.
Can you imagine breaking into that house and then you see that belt and you see that helmet? You'd be like, okay, I think I'm just gonna take myself
out. Listen, I just won.
Look at like that guy.
This rifle. I don't know if it's an AR-15 or whatever, but
look at that.
I gave it away, and then I got myself this self-defense weapon that I can have. I actually am not allowed to have guns, but I got a self-defense weapon that I can have, and it's a handgun without it's a CO2 handgun that shoots these little pool balls at you, and it'll take somebody down, man.
Wow. That's
please
crazy.
Please don't come over to my house trying to find out.
Nah, hell no. Plus, you'd probably hear us with the leaves on the driveway. You'd hear the crinkling.
I gotta go clean that shit.
Did you have any words with Masvidal? I know that fight you were referencing, your boy Alex Nicholson. I think you're a hell of a corner man too, man. You were getting me psyched up for the fight just as you guys were getting ready to walk out. But you mentioned Kimbo and Jorge. Did you have a chance to talk to Jorge at all and talk about that culture, you know, I guess the early days?
Yeah, you know what, man, during his week or whatever, he was very busy. I did get to speak to him on my podcast, Overdogs Podcast. And Jorge is in a great place and he's doing big things and he means well for his fighters that fight for him and his organization, because he came up fighting. So it's a little different than some organization owners who were never really fighters. You know, I don't know. He's given the fighters a lot of respect. And I talked to him for a little bit and he was rooting. I mean, may the best man win, but he was definitely giving us attention that was hopefully going to go towards being the big victors. Not to say that he wasn't giving it to the other side, but you know, he was friendly all around, and it's cool to see, because Jorge, you know, watch him fight and talk, you know, say the things he had to say in buildups to his fights. You know, he's just a guy, like, you know, one of the homies, you know, and we all out here trying to live better lives and be better people, and, you know, get money so that us and our family can be good and taken care of, and then we can actually enjoy life, take some vacations, eat some good food, things like that. You know, Jorge's an upstanding man, real person, very real. You know what I mean? So I definitely can look up to that. I try to be very real. I think I am very real. I don't know if I know another way. You know, sometimes I say the first thing I think of, and I'm like, ah, I cringe at my mouth sometimes, but other people, they've been showing me love and respect, you know, and I just definitely, one of my biggest mental health workouts is actually physically working out, and it just clears my mind so much. I haven't done it today because I'm going to spar tonight, so I got to clean some stuff up, man.
I feel like I got to ask this before we let you go. I've heard Overdogs. It's a fun podcast, man. Great job on that. I've heard you, I've seen you, you know, you're real popular. You're all over YouTube and things like that. So I've heard you, you know, what you said the other day towards Dana White, but I also heard you give a lot of love towards Hunter Campbell. So overall, was it just a moment for you, a frustration, or is it all cool? Cause it sounded like you preserve a good relationship with the UFC, but, even though you're BKFC, you know, you just strike me as a guy that loves combat sports in general. But is there anything you want to clear up in that regard?
Man, before my podcast, there was a lot of times that I wanted to say some rambunctious stuff. I just didn't. And my wife taught me that, you know, like, she didn't really verbalize it. But by watching her, that's what I got. It's like, you know, sometimes your mouth can dig a hole and that you're going to fall into. And I stopped myself many times from having my mouth dig a hole. You know, I don't want to burn bridges and things like that. And sometimes when I think off a whim, I don't even say the shit. There's many a times that I think I'm about to tweet some shit that I don't tweet out. And not to say that it would matter or make a difference, but it would make a difference in my life because it would probably burn something and I don't want to fucking burn. So I didn't say it a lot. And now I'm doing these podcasts where I'm talking all the time. And, you know, I got no ill will towards Dana White or towards the UFC. There were some times that I was like, damn, I'm kind of mad at some people in the UFC, but like, who cares? That's just gonna keep on churning, and you know, they're a world beater, so what can you really do? So, you know, I hate to sound like one of those people complaining, and that's what that rant was. It was me fucking complaining, and I got some support on it, but I, you know, sometimes I'm just like, damn, I just want to be quiet again and get back to training. And but as a fighter, you got to talk because you need attention so that people will watch your fight. People will buy a pay-per-view and you have bigger numbers, like, you know, Mayweather and McGregor are fantastic speakers. Mostly McGregor is just a world-class speaker. And they got like the most pay-per-view buys. They said Pacquiao and Mayweather was better in buys. But dude, that journey that they took, the media tour that they took through the different countries, and they put on the show talking every time. Like, that was probably like a once in a lifetime type of buildup for a fight, was Mayweather and McGregor. And I mean, I'm not as good of a talker, bro. I'm really not. So I try to be honest now. Like, for example, when me and McGregor got to face off, I just tried to be factual, and he was like, so it's you and me then, huh? And I'm like, yeah, why not? And I'm like, I see you practicing this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I was trying to say, you know, you fought Cowboy. Cowboy had take my arm, and then you fought him. And he said, what did I do to him? And I said, I know. You took him out quick. You gave me a good lesson in that show. And I guess really all it did by giving him respect, it kind of diffused him. And I mean, that's what's tough about fighting, bro. It's like you got to talk the fight up. You got to make it make sense. And honestly, as far as technique goes, especially in bare knuckle boxing with no gloves, no matter who I'm facing, no matter who I'm up against, I feel like I can win because I just love a good scrap and I love all sides of it. Putting pressure on you, hitting you, you know, rolling your shots and trying to hit you back. So, you know, the same thing goes with speaking. You roll with some punches, man. And at the end of the day, I was on a podcast last night. Shout out Philly Fresh. I was listening to a song on the way over. I said, man, fuck it. I'm on one. You can't dwell and sit about and on those cringe moments where you're like, ah, I wish I said something different. Well, you didn't. You know, you move forward. And, hey, fuck it. I'm on one, bro. What do y'all really want from me? I'm this crazy fighter and I can have a conversation with somebody, but then sometimes the questions get in there and then they bounce around. And I'm like, well, fuck the bullshit. Let's just throw punches.
Man, I find you entertaining as fuck. So keep doing your thing. I'm glad things are pretty much going to be cool between you guys because I'd love to see you over there at their event in Miami on Saturday. And I'd love to see them at your event in LA.
Well, I can't
on the 27th, you know? So
I would like to go to Miami. I got people in Miami I would love, but my daughter's first birthday party is Saturday. We are having a nice celebration for her.
There you go.
She's turning one and we're getting the family and people together and we're having a nice little celebration for her on Saturday. So
that sounds like a better time. Yep, you do that.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you guys.
Be there for your daughter. But that doesn't mean that they won't go. A lot of you are going to go to the Bare Knuckle Mania in LA. We're from LA, so we're going to be there as well.
Make sure you tune in April 27th. Watch me beat the shit out of Thiago Alves.
For sure. Those that want to go, it's at the Peacock Theater. Those that want to watch, streaming on the BKFC app and on Fubo TV. The King of Violence himself, Mike Perry, headlines that event versus Thiago Alves on the 27th of April. So we're just about seven weeks away. Thanks for the time, Platinum. Always great to talk to you. You always bring it. You always keep it real, and we enjoy it.
Thank you, guys.
Well, he certainly kept it real, huh?
Yeah, he did. He was fun, though.
He is. It seems like he's outgrown the stage where he was more of a knucklehead. It seems like he can revert to being a knucklehead, but he's like kind of catching himself. And if he does say or act on something, there's regret. And I think that's a little bit of maturity. Now, it'd be better if he wouldn't get to the point where he has something to regret. But it's a process, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, looking back on it, George, I almost wonder if at spinning back click, maybe one of the additionals should have been like, are the underdog, the veterans, the UFC veterans being overlooked a little bit here on this card on 299, because it does have that feel where some of these guys are trying to make names off of others. And I don't know that some of them are really ready to be ushered in that direction just yet.
Macy Barber's minus 210 against Caitlin Sermonera. Jailton Almeida and Curtis Blaydes is a coin flip, and Blaydes is rarely a coin flip. He's usually just favored because of his wrestling and his size. It's when he's stubborn and tries to stand too much that he's in trouble, but this isn't a guy that's really going to want to do that. This guy wants to take it to the ground, but if his wrestling can trump Almeida's jiu-jitsu, he should be able to cruise to a decision win.
Yeah, I don't know. That was another one where I was racking my brain trying to figure out what could possibly happen in this one. Because you don't know, you know, it's just, again, like I was saying, veteran versus up-and-coming guy. I don't know. I don't know what you get here on this one.
Here's one that reminds me of one of our first junkie gatherings. Do you remember when Jamie Varner came to the studio? His ass was all sweating. He was sweating all over our seats and everything. But a lot of people didn't know Jamie had developed some pretty nice hands. He was a former WEC lightweight. Those guys didn't get a lot of respect early on. Him, Cowboy, Benson Henderson, Anthony Pettis, Shane Roller. And Barbosa was just a flashy striker. And the odds were very similar to what I see right now with Matheus Gamrot is like minus 500, minus 470. Great wrestler. Can take you down and strangle you. But let me tell you something. If RDA is healthy, I know he's got a lot of wear and tear. I know he's up there in age. But RDA has really good jiu-jitsu. He can wrestle. He's got good cardio. He's only got to go 15 minutes. And his striking ain't bad, man. He's plus 375. That's crazy to me.
I honestly feel like just putting money on all of those underdogs, because I think you're getting good money for the skill sets that they're representing. Like you said, the only thing you got to worry about RDA is he getting older, you know? Yeah. Is this the one where he has slowed down, but he hasn't gotten to the point where you're like that. He could never be the RDA he once was like that. I don't know. That might happen in this fight, but that just seems like a lot.
Yeah. I mean, he's been about a 500 fighter basically. He submitted Kevin Lee. He lost to Leon Edwards, but that dude wound up being champ. He lost to Michael Chiesa, and Michael Chiesa has also been on a slide. Then he beats Paul Felder with decision. He beats Renato Moicano. He loses to Rafael Fiziev. He got KO'd in that one. He beats Brian Barberina. He submits him. He gets decision by Vicente Luque. He's fighting top dogs. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Gamrot isn't that, but what I'm saying is those odds are just crazy. Like, over 15 minutes, RDA is as tough as they come. So I don't know about this, man.
It's plus three what?
375.
So if I'm on the other side of that, if I'm the other fighter, if I'm Gamrot, that means I'm probably going like this with my hands. Like, this is an easy week of work here. Like, I'm going to get this done. That, to me, doesn't represent probably what's going through Gamrot's head. I think he's sitting there going, man, this is a tough dude, and I don't know how much credit I'm going to get for beating him. This kind of sucks. That's what I'm thinking. He's thinking. Those odds don't represent that, though.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Mokaev was like minus 275, 300, mm-hmm. and he had Alex Perez in it. Perez has only fought like once in 24, once in 22, once in 20, ever since he lost to Figgy. And you know, he's okay. He's like 12-3 overall, so he's not a tomato can or nothing like that, but he's definitely not RDA. And Gamrot, I don't think, is Mokaev. Like, Mokaev is pretty good, but even he wasn't as big of a favorite over Alex Perez as what I just stated here with Gamrot and RDA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
What do you think of some of the other news out there, man, before we wrap up? I guess maybe I already started in on it. The McGregor thing about, hey, I want Chandler and Diaz or whatever. Just, are you like me? Like, good for you.
This is the first time that I think I have officially just went, whatever. You know, every time, like, I'll have some kind of reaction to it. I'll do the math sometimes. I think I'm just over the guy. This is the one time where I read it and I went, who gives a shit? Whatever.
I know, man. Me too. I was like, it really got buried in the news. I mean, he said it. It was there and it kind of popped for a moment, but then it got buried. And then another story that I saw too that I wanted to talk about was Dricus du Plessis. He says it was an injury that prevented him from defending versus Israel Adesanya at UFC 300. Now, this is a guy who didn't fight Israel Adesanya in Australia last September, waited, and then fought Sean Strickland in Toronto when he was 100. I was giving him props in another interview today. We did like six of them on how his patience paid off.
I think that's the way it should be. you know, I think that's the way you do handle your career. Now, sometimes the UFC doesn't make it easy on you when you make those decisions, but I feel like, look, man, you're in the you business. You know, that's all you care about, your health. I think that's the most important thing, going in 100% into these fights. I get him. I think I kind of commend him for taking the stances that he's taken.
This is a quote that he had. He says, with the conversations of 300, that would have been a massive fight with me and Izzy. It was on the table, 100%. But the one thing people don't realize is, why would I go and start a camp once again injured if I am the champion? Taking risks is one thing. I've been taking risks a lot. But why would I risk? I'm the champion now, and I can fight when I'm ready. I think Izzy misjudges himself as still being the champion, and he's not. You will fight when you get the opportunity. You don't dictate when I fight. Kind of blunt, huh?
Well, yeah. And then, you know, on the UFC side, like, chill out, man. Like, wouldn't you rather do this in Africa? It just seems so, I don't know how difficult it is. I mean, they say that they want to go there. Go there. This is the fight to make out there. I think that would be tremendous. Why are you going to throw that all away just to make a couple people happy at UFC 300? Like, it's already a great card, man. But don't, like, you know, we're all talking about the next pay-per-view after 300. What's going to go on there? Like, we're going to be having a lot of these questions because of how much has been thrown into these last few cards. And I know that, man, it almost sounds like so stupid, right? Because we're not happy when we don't have big cards, and we're not happy when we do, but you just got to find like the right balance.
He did finish kind of saying something along with what you said. I should have just read it. It says, this is the final paragraph. He says, the fight's going to happen. He's been a big mouth about coming to South Africa and dragging carcasses. I mean, that's what he said. So be a man of your word, step up, do it. Let's make UFC Africa. Let's make that happen. Obviously, that's what I would love in an ideal situation, fighting Israel Adesanya on African and South African soil. I'm telling you, I really love the way this guy kind of dictates his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, listen, we could go on and on, but let me point you to a couple things. Obviously, the website, it's always popping with information. We are delivering news stories every 30 to 45 minutes, and it just keeps coming in from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, where Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua are going to fight on Friday. That's at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. They're like 14 hours ahead of GOES. That's why it's that bizarre time on Friday. And then Saturday, your normal 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for the four featured prelim fights. That's the pay-per-view. That's when GOES and I will start. We'll do that and the five on the pay-per-view, 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. You'll see a lot of us promoting this. So subscribe right now to YouTube, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Actually, the links will take you to where we're going to do it on MMA Junkie, but it's a good idea to subscribe anyway for the Spinning Back Click Show, which is live every Monday, and that's where we'll recap the past week. I'm sure a lot of it will have to do with Francis Ngannou and UFC 299. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at MMA Junkie George. GOES is at the GOES. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And so, yeah, thank you to Mike Perry for his time. Don't forget, again, subscribe to the YouTube channel. And I don't even know if people still say this, but we have a pretty cool free app that's available on all mobile phones and tablets. So it's a good way to follow the sport on your phone. And if you go to schedule, it'll tell you all the info for all these cards, start time, things like that, like what I just did. All right, folks, we'll see you all on Saturday. Go out and be a champion. Take care.